Watchman's Teaching Letter, Volume 2, The Demise of Edom. Watchman's Teaching Letter Number 26, June 2000. From the 2000 Watchman's Teaching Letters by Clifton Emmaheiser. Read by Dan Adams. This is my 26th monthly teaching letter. Before I get started with Lesson 26, I would like to clear up some issues in my past lessons. With all the research that goes into preparing these lessons, it is inevitable that somewhere along the line one will run into new information which will conflict with what was introduced before. In the Watchman's Teaching Letter Number 11, dated March 1999, I used the reference book Insight on the Scriptures, Volume 2, pages 988 to 991, to prove that Hiram, the artificer of Tyre, was a half-breed. I have evidence now that this Hiram was a full-blooded Israelite. I will be discussing this further in this letter. In the Watchman's Teaching Letter Number 20, dated December 1999, I showed evidence that the quote-unquote Jews killed Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, in 2 Chronicles 24:20-21, to fulfill Matthew 23:35. This was not totally an error, for the quote-unquote Jews killed two people by the name of Zechariah. This one, and the Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist. I will have to write more about this in future lessons. In the Watchman's Teaching Letter Number 23, dated March 2000, I stated that Esau had only three wives. Later I found that Esau had a fourth wife, but had only daughters by her, and thus she was not counted in the genealogy. Jasher 30, 21, and 22. The Demise of Esau. If you will remember in the last lesson, I brought to light that a Tartar tribe had moved into the land of Canaan and appeared to be the tribe that the Canaanite sons of Ham mixed with, and ultimately were the people from whom Esau took wives. I documented much about a Mongolian people named Hurrians into whom Esau married. But what does all of this have to do with Esau? It has everything to do with Esau, for if we do not know all about these basic happenings, we will not understand his complete story. We will be getting into the subject of the Hurrians in future lessons. I can categorically promise you there are a lot more elements to these stories than the average Bible student realizes. The next phase of this matter is to understand the difference between the Canaanites of Tyre and the Israelites of Tyre. This is a topic which was vigorously pointed out to me only recently. As a matter of fact, if it hadn't been pointed out to me, I may have never figured it out. This is a topic which even the best teachers in Israel identity have missed. In all my thousands of hours of studying Israel identity, I have not encountered anyone who expounded on this subject to any great degree. I am grateful with this lesson to have someone who is helping me, who has done some extensive research in this area. The Canaanites of Tyre versus the Israelites of Tyre. It is true we all have a lot to learn, and we have to be careful to avoid arguments which seem apparently to be correct, but underneath the surface are actually invalid. This seems to be the case with the subject we are about to consider. Almost every reference book will point out that the cursed sons of Canaan moved into the coastal areas of what is now Palestine, which includes Tyre and Sidon, which they may have done. Scripture seems to suggest the Canaanites occupied much of the land before the Israelites moved in. Tyre may have been a base for island hopping for some of Shem's descendants, such as Ashur, Assyria, as one of the possible ancient names for Tyre may have been Assur. Because this is a long topic, it may take some time to complete, if not in this lesson, then in another. The subject of Tyre is not totally black or white, but probably lies somewhere in between, and all this depending on the time period concerned, and is somewhat confusing and bewildering to say the least. Hopefully, as we continue along, a picture will develop which can clear up the whole question. We will be gathering information from our Bibles, both the King James Version and the Septuagint, along with the works of Josephus. It will be necessary to weave in and out of these different references to comprehend the overall portrayal of this account. The so-called authoritative professors of history would love to have us believe that somehow the great quote-unquote Phoenician mariners who found their way through the treacherous seas to Scandinavia in ancient times were Canaanites. It might be well to scrutinize as arduously as possible anything these quote-unquote scholars of renown profess. We add here, yes indeed, especially considering the critical stranglehold the quote-unquote Jews have on much academic research, actually extending back for a long time now, all due to their control over the money system they have put in place. How long have they exercised the stranglehold? Back to the period of the transition between the seventh beast system, Napoleon, and the present and last beast system, run by the quote-unquote Jews from behind the scenes, hence Mystery Babylon, which could be said to have come into existence in 1815. Their control extends at least back as far as their emergence from the quote-unquote bottomless pit, culminating in their acceptance as quote-unquote citizens within our countries. By the way, Clifton's contention here that the Canaanites get undue credit also squares with various excuses for either accepting the quote-unquote Jew-inspired idea that they are Shemites, when they clearly are not, and that we are Jephthahites, or their equally detestable notions of following people around by the languages they used rather than the relics they left behind, and when those can possibly have reason to be dated from their surroundings. Just as we have quote-unquote out-of-context biblical doctrines, so there are and were out-of-context archaeological doctrines based on the agendas of the usual suspects trying to pretend that they were and are us. Also note that at this time we accept and frankly do not care about any races before the appearance of us, labeled the so-called Indo-European group, because they can't get it through their heads that races do and have moved in the past, and often when doing so, have dropped usage of their former language and adopted the language of their new neighbors. These obvious oversights cause endless confusion on this subject. Returning to Clifton. One of the first Bible verses we might consider according to tracing our white ancestors by Habermann, page 69, would be Genesis 49:13. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. The Wycliffe Bible Commentary, page 46, comments thusly, Zebulun, Jacob's sixth son by Leah, was to be situated in a place where commercial activity and prosperity would be possible. This may mean that territory along the seacoast was to be allotted to the tribe of Zebulun, or it may mean that prosperity would come to the descendants of Zebulun because of their proximity to the Phoenicians, who had unlimited access to the trade routes. Jacob mentions Sidon as being there. It is also possible that Jacob's prediction was not fully carried out when the final division of the land was made, end quote. To understand this prophecy, it may be necessary to understand it was to be possibly both a short and long-range forecast. I have a map of Canaan showing the allotment of land given to the various tribes. Zebulun is shown to be totally landlocked, without a seaport. Later, during the time of David and Solomon, the borders seem to have changed somewhat. Whether or not Zebulun ever became part of Phoenicia and extended to Sidon seems questionable. From Genesis 49:1, it would seem to indicate this prophecy has something to do with the period called the last days. But the word last in this verse is Strong's number 319 and may also be translated future. Reading future would make more sense, especially considering Judah's scepter in Genesis 49:10. From the Septuagint, Genesis 49:13 may literally read, Zebulun shall dwell on the coast, and he shall be by a haven of ships, and shall extend to Sidon. According to the book Strange Parallel by Helene Coppajohn, Holland is claimed to be of Zebulun. If this is true as a future prophecy, Holland having Rotterdam, Amsterdam, and Umiden as seaports would symbolically represent Phoenicia. No doubt other countries can claim to be of Zebulun also, for they also have the emblem of the ship. Check page 52 of Symbols of Our Celto-Saxon Heritage by W. H. Bennett. This looks to be a very nice and important book. Israel to inhabit Tyre and Sidon. Joshua verses 11:8, 13:4, 13:6, and 19:28-29 all make it clear that Israel was very active in and would inhabit the land of Sidon, encompassing Tyre and points north. Probably the Tyre mentioned in Joshua 19:29 is Paleo Tyre. Tyre or Paleo Tyre is not mentioned in Judges 1:31, which lists cities in Asher's territory where Canaanites remained. It is also clear from Judges 3:3 and 10:6 that Israelites were living among the Canaanites not removed from the land of Sidon. Let's consider the scriptures mentioned here. Joshua 11:8, and Yahweh delivered them, northern Canaanites, into the hand of Israel, who smote them and chased them into great Zidon and into Mizrath-Ophanim, lime-burning or salt pits, and to the valley of Mizpah eastward, and they smote them until they left them none remaining. Joshua 13:4, from the south all the land of the Canaanites and Merah, that is, beside the Sidonians, unto Aphek, to the borders of the Amorites. Joshua 13:6, all the inhabitants of the hill country from Lebanon unto Mizrath-Ophanim, and all the Sidonians. Then will I drive out from before the children of Israel, only divide thou it by lot unto the Israelites for an inheritance, as I have commanded thee. Joshua 19:28-29, and Hebron and Rehob, and Hammon and Cana, even unto great Zidon, and then the coast turneth to Ramah, and to the strong city Tyre, and the coast turneth to Hosah, and the outgoing thereof are at the sea from the coast to Achzib. Judges 3:3, Israel lived with, namely, five lands of the Philistines, and all the Canaanites, and the Sidonians, and the Hivites that dwelt in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Harmon unto the entering in of Hamath. Judges 10:6, ditto, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of Yahweh, and served Baalim and Ashtaroth, and the gods of Syria, and the gods of Zidon, and the gods of Moab, and the gods of the children of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines, and forsook Yahweh, and served not him. There were two cities of Tyre. The World Book Encyclopedia says in part, volume 18, page 455, part of the city stood on the mainland and part on an island across a narrow channel. End quote. Insight on the Scriptures, volume 2, page 1136, says in part, Alexander in his rage had his army scrape up the ruins of the mainland city and threw it into the sea, thus building a causeway out to the island city. End quote. Josephus in Antiquities 8:31 states that Tyre, and he must mean the island city, was built 240 years before Solomon had started the temple in Jerusalem. In Against Appian 1:18, he states that Carthage was built almost 144 years after the temple was begun. Josephus Antiquities 8:31, Solomon began to build the temple in the fourth year of his reign on the second month, which the Macedonians call Artemisius and the Hebrews Ur or Jur, 592 years after the Exodus out of Egypt, but 1,020 years from Abraham's coming out of Mesopotamia into Canaan, and after the deluge 1,440 years. And from Adam, the first white man who was created, until Solomon built the temple, there had passed in all 3,102 years. That would make 7,116 years from Adam to 2014. Now that on which the temple began to be built was already the 11th year of the reign of Hiram. We're going to call him Hiram because that's how most people who see his name would pronounce it. But from the building of Tyre to the building of the temple, there had passed 240 years. End quote. Josephus Against Appian 1:18. So the whole time from the reign of Hiram till the building of Carthage amounts to the sum of 155 years and 8 months. Since then, the temple was built at Jerusalem in the 12th year of the reign of Hiram. There were from the building of the temple until the building of Carthage 143 years and 8 months. End quote. If all of this is true, the island city of Tyre was probably built by Israelites, while the mainland city of Tyre may have been built many years before. Just when the mainland city of Tyre was built and by whom is not clear at this time. It should be noted, though, that the city of Sidon had a Canaanite name of one of Canaan's sons, Sidon, Genesis 10:15. This may not have much bearing upon the racial makeup of the city during the Phoenician period. Yes, we must have a general comprehension of all these things in order to understand Esau. Did the Canaanites then build Carthage? If we build on the premise that the city of Tyre or the Phoenicians were Canaanites, essentially we are saying the Canaanites founded Carthage. Sad but true, this is exactly what many leading historians advance. You can begin to see it is highly unlikely the Canaanites ever had anything to do with the building of Carthage. They are much more apt to be parasites and leeches rather than colonizers and builders. Have they built one single prominent city other than their ghettos anywhere in the world since the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD? The year Tyre was built. We can figure the approximate time the city of Tyre was built, since mainland Tyre had already been a strong city, Joshua 19:29. This calculation is most likely for the island city. In Josephus, Whiston's dissertation, William Whiston being a translator of Josephus, there is a chart which stipulates the temple is given a date of 1052 BC for being built. According to Josephus 8:31, the temple was built 240 years after the founding of Tyre. If we add 240 years to this figure, we arrive at a date of 1292. Roughly figuring, then, the foundation of Tyre must have been sometime during the period of the Judges. This suggests very strongly that Tyre was built by Israelites rather than Canaanites, for the Israelites were quite well established in Canaan by this time. In 2 Samuel 24:2-7, David sends Joab to number the children of Israel, and Tyre and Sidon, known as Phoenicia, are among the places he visited. For the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, "Go now through all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, and number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people." And Joab said unto the king, "Now Yahweh, thy singular Elohim, add unto the people how many soever they be, an hundredfold, and that the eyes of my master the king may see it. But why doth my master the king delight in this thing?" Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captain of the host, and Joab and the captain of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. And they passed over the Jordan and pitched in Aroer, on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river of Gad, and toward Jazer. Then they came to Gilead and to the land of Tatimboshi. And they came to Danjaan and about to Zidon, and came to the stronghold of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hevites and of the Canaanites. And they went out to the south of Judah, even to Beersheba. We can know from all of this the king wanted to know how many Israelites there were in Sidon and Tyre, or Phoenicians, as they were called. Whether or not this census took in both the mainland city of Tyre and the island city as well is not indicated. Speaking of censuses, we are now in the process in the United States of taking a census. I wonder if they will include all the Canaanites living among us. When David ordered this census, he surely only counted Israelites, as Tyre and Sidon are mentioned separately from the Hevites and Canaanites. The main point here is to show there were Israelites to be counted both at Sidon and Tyre. Asher had inherited mainland Tyre, called the Stronghold City, in this passage and in Joshua 19:29. Being that censuser over the years were generally used for taxation purposes and to conscript soldiers for war, they have never been very popular with the people. Not only is it recorded in Judges 18:7-29 concerning the Danite conquest of Laish to found the city of Dan, but Israel's strong presence in the land of Sidon is evident in many other places in the Bible. In 1 Kings 17:9, Yahweh sends Elijah to Zarephath, which is on the coast of Sidon. This further confirms Israel's presence in the land of Phoenicia, where Tyre and Sidon were located. This verse says, "Arise, get thee to Zarephath, which belongeth to Sidon, and dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain thee." The Adam Clark Commentary on the Bible, abridged by Ralph Earle, page 351, has this to say about this verse: "Get thee to Zarephath. This was a town between Tyre and Sidon, but nearer to Sidon, and is therefore called in the text Zarephath, which belongeth to Sidon, or, as the Vulgate and other versions express it, Sarepta of the Sidonians." Sarepta is the name by which it goes in the New Testament. End quote. Are we to believe that this Phoenician widow woman to whom Elijah was sent was a Canaanite? Israel's presence in the land. In 1 Kings 15:16-22, we read of King Asa, or Asa, of Judah, declaring war with Baasha, king of Israel. There had already been a continual spirit of hostility kept between the southern and northern kingdoms. To fight a war, Asa removed the treasures from the house of Yahweh and hired the king of Syria, Aram, to ally himself with him against Israel. Together they smote Ejon, Dan, and Abel-Beth-Ma'akah, among other Israelite areas. Dan lay east of Tyre, and equally as far north. This places Ejon several miles north of Dan. Abel-Beth Ma'ach, which Josephus calls Abel-Ma'in, Antiquities 8:12-4, is speculated by Whiston and others to be the same as Abilah or Abilene, the Abilene of Mark 3:1. Abilene is nearly 40 miles north of Dan and nearly 15 miles northwest of Damascus. The footnote to Josephus Antiquities 8:12-4 reads as follows. This Abelmain or Abilene is supposed to be the same with Abel or Abilah, whence came Abilene. This may be the city denominated from Abel, son of Adam, the righteous, there buried, concerning the shedding of whose blood within the compass of the land of Israel I understand our Savior's words about the fatal war and overthrow of Judah by Titus and his Roman army, Matthew 23:35-36 and Luke 11:51, end quote. From all of this, the tribe of Dan, right next door to the area of Phoenicia, may have had much interrelationship with Tyre and Sidon. Judges 5:17 says, Gilead abode beyond Jordan, and why did Dan remain in ships? Asher continued on the seashore and abode in his breeches. The Jamieson, Fawcett, and Brown Commentary on the Whole Bible, page 188, describes this verse quite well. Gilead abode beyond Jordan, that is, both Gad and the eastern half of Manasseh chose to dwell at ease in their Havoth Jair, or villages of tents, while Dan and Asher, both maritime tribes, continued with their ships and in their breaches, havens. End quote. I guess if you wanted to bring this picture up to date, you might see Gad and Manasseh in their motorhomes and house trailers, and Dan and Asher at the lake in their motorboats. The main thing to notice here is that Dan and Asher would have to have used Tyre and Sidon as harbors for their ships, for these were about the only port facilities along that coast, and they would, as the Greeks named them, have been known as Phoenicians. If one will read Joshua 19:24-31, one can only be impressed with a strong presence of Israel in the land of Canaan. In these verses, it is spelled out as to the area of land which Asher had drawn by lot to be his possession. It included a strip along the Mediterranean Sea from Mount Carmel north to Tyre and beyond, about 10 to 15 miles in width. In this fertile area, Asher became famous in the olive business. There was one major problem with Asher. He never drove the Canaanites out of his area. We can read about this in Judges 1:31-32. Neither did Asher drive out the inhabitants of Akko, nor the inhabitants of Zidon, nor Ahlab, nor of Achzib, nor of Elba, nor of Apik, nor of Rehob. But the Asherites dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. For this reason, historians and many so-called Bible authorities are still getting the Phoenician Asherite confused with the Canaanites. One such so-called authority is L.A. Waddell. For further insight concerning the confusion of Asherites being confused with Canaanites, I will quote from The Makers of Civilization by L.A. Waddell, pages 16 and 17. Incidentally, Waddell has a lot of mixed up information in his writings, so we have to be careful when quoting from his writings. Notice how Waddell incorrectly tries to say the Phoenicians were Canaanites. Phoenicians and their civilization, language, writing, and religion, of Sumerian or Aryan origin. With the Phoenicians, we reach a paradox. According to the current modern opinion, The Phoenicians are universally believed to be Semites, that is, children of Shem, Shem being the traditional ancestor of the Hebrews, though incongruously made by them the uterine brother of Japhet the Aryan, in their impossible scheme of the origin of the different races of mankind from one immediate common father, entailed by their having killed off all other human beings by their universal flood myth. And this supposed Shemite racial origin of the Phoenicians is nevertheless believed, notwithstanding the stultifying fact that the real Semites, the Hebrews, who ought to know best who were Semites and who were not, definitely state in their Old Testament that the Phoenicians, therein called Canaan Sidon, were not the children of Shem at all, but were the children of Ham, that is, of Egypt, the old name for which was Ham or Khan, and which land, we shall see in the present work, was the chief settlement of the early Phoenicians on their advent to the Mediterranean from the Persian Gulf. Despite this positive testimony of the Semites themselves against the Phoenicians being Semites, modern writers nevertheless arbitrarily call them such and point to the inscriptions of the later Phoenicians of Phoenicia and Carthage from about the 9th century BC onwards as being written in a Semitic dialect and inscribed in the reverse or retrograde direction from right to left, with reversed letters as adopted by Semitic scribes, end quote. This is a very good example of how the Phoenicians are incorrectly identified as Canaanites. After making a blunder of this proportion, we need to examine every comment which Waddell has to offer. With this particular posture, Waddell shows many of his materials cannot be trusted. We'll have to sort out the correct things he has to offer and throw the rest out the window. Was Hiram, artificer of Tyre, part Canaanite? Hiram, the artificer of 1 Kings 7, 13 and 14, is described therein as having a mother of the tribe of Naphtali and a father who was a man of Tyre. And King Solomon sent and fetched Hiram out of Tyre. He was a widow's son of the tribe of Naphtali, and his father was a man of Tyre, a worker in brass, and he was filled with wisdom and understanding and cunning to work all works in brass. And he came to King Solomon and wrought all his works. Josephus Antiquities 8:3-4 says of Hiram's father's side of his house, "Now Solomon sent for an artificer out of Tyre, whose name was Hiram. He was by birth of the tribe of Naphtali on the mother's side, for she was of that tribe, but his father was of the stock of the Israelites." End quote. You will notice that it doesn't give Hiram's father's tribe, but it definitely does state he was pure Israelite. Many writers will state he was half Israelite, implying he was half something else, usually Canaanite. Different Hirams? The King Hiram of 1 Kings 5:12 and Huram in 2 Chronicles is simply not the same person as Hiram the artificer. 1 Kings 7:13, 7:40, 7:45, and 2 Chronicles 2:7. Huram, again in 2 Chronicles 4:11 and 4:16. More bad information concerning the Phoenicians. For documentation on all of this, I am going to quote the works of the quote-unquote Jews themselves from the History of the Jews by Heinrich Graetz, Volume 1, pages 2 and 3. You will notice very early in this quotation that Graetz makes the claim that the Phoenicians were Canaanites, which seems utterly absurd. Much of what Graetz says about the descendants of Canaan are true. Canaan did settle in this area, illegally, before the Israelites had time to move in and claim their rightful inheritance. We really need to separate the misinformation which Graetz is presenting from the actual truth. Then, too, are we to believe the Canaanites introduced writing and the alphabet to the world? This, again, is absurd. As you read this, take all of these things into consideration. Another thing which should be questioned are the quote-unquote Jews deliberately trying to confuse this important part of Israel's history. Another group of inhabitants which had settled in the land between the Mediterranean and the Jordan was that of the Canaanites, whom the Greeks called Phoenicians. These Phoenicians appear to have pursued the same employment in their new country as they had followed on the banks of the Red Sea or the Persian Gulf. Their chief pursuits were navigation and commerce. The position which they had selected was eminently favorable to their daring expeditions. The great ocean, forming a strait at the Pillars of Hercules and separating Europe from Africa as the Mediterranean Sea, has here its extreme limit. At the foot of the snow-topped Lebanon and its spurs, commodious inlets form natural harbors that required but little improvement at the hand of man. On this seaboard, the Canaanites built the town of Sidon, situated on a prominent crag which overhangs the sea. They afterwards built, on a small rocky island, the port of Tyre, Tor, which subsequently became celebrated. They also built Aradus, to the north of Sidon, and Akko, Acre, to the south of Tyre. The neighboring forest of the Lebanon and the Anti-Lebanon supplied them with lofty cedars and strong cypresses for ships. The Canaanites, who became the first mercantile nation in the world, owed much of their success to the advantage of finding on their coast various species of the murex, Tola atchani, from the fluid of which was obtained a most brilliant and widely celebrated purple dye. The beautiful white sand of the river Belus near Acre supplied fine glass, an article which was likewise in much request in the Old World. The wealth of the country lay in the sands of the seashore. The Canaanites, on account of their extensive trade, required and introduced at an early period a convenient form of writing, and their alphabet, the Phoenician, became the model for the alphabets of ancient and modern nations. In a word, the narrow belt of land between the Mediterranean and Mount Lebanon, with its spurs, became one of the most important points on the face of the globe. Through the peaceful pursuits of commerce, the Canaanites were brought into contact with remote nations who were gradually aroused from a state of inactivity. They became subdivided into the small nationalities of Amorites, Hittites, Hivites, and Perizzites. The Jebusites, who inhabited this district on the tract of land, which afterward became the site for the city of Jerusalem. Sure makes them Canaanites sound like swell people, don't it? And you suppose the quote-unquote Jews don't know some of the truth concerning themselves and their origins? If you have followed this discussion very closely, you may be one of the very few who understand the Phoenicians were not Canaanites. This is a subject that needs to be addressed much more than what I have been able to do here. Meanwhile, we should resolve any questions we might have in our minds and find the right answers. I will try to answer some of the following questions in future lessons. At what time did the Israelite Phoenicians occupy Tyre and Sidon? And what other peoples may have occupied the areas known as Phoenicia, and when? If the Asherite Phoenicians migrated away from this area, where did they migrate to? The Phoenicians were colonizers. Where did they set up colonies? How many Israel tribes made up the group known as Phoenicia, and who were they? Evidently, in time, the Canaanites did reoccupy the Phoenician territory of Palestine, Mark 7:26. When and how did this all happen? Did the Canaanites make their way to the colonies which the Phoenicians had settled, like there are Canaanites allegedly reported to be in southern Ireland today? What was the relationship between the Israelites and the Canaanites during the time the Canaanites lived among the Israelites in the area known as Phoenicia? Were they parasites then as they are today? Why would Yahweh tell Elijah that Zarephath belonged to Zidon, 1 Kings 17:9, when he had given that land to Israel. The name Hiram means whiteness or noble, Number 2361 and Number 2438. Does this sound like a Canaanite name? Why would Yahweh allow a Canaanite to help build his temple? 1 Kings 5:1 and 2 mentions Hiram was a lover of David. Could a family of Canaanites have such an enduring affection for David, who fought so valiantly for the causes of Israel? In 2 Samuel 5:11, it is recorded that Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers, cedar trees, carpenters, and masons to build David a house. Would David have accepted such a gift from a Canaanite? In 1 Kings 5:7, it appears that Hiram had great respect for Yahweh. Is this the type of behavior one would expect from a Canaanite? 1 Kings 9:27 mentions a joint naval venture between Solomon and Hiram. The Israelites probably did use Canaanites as oarsmen, Ezekiel 27:8. But were the Canaanites of the same caliber of men as the Israelites? Were the great Tyrian Phoenician mariners Canaanites, as some tout? It is further recorded in 1 Kings 9:10 through 14 that Solomon gave 20 run-down vacant cities, 2 Chronicles 8:2, which explains they were later rebuilt, formerly occupied by the Asherites, to Hiram. Where did all these missing Asherites go? And were Tyre and Sidon jumping-off points for some of Israel's migrations? Why aren't Dan and Zebulun mentioned in 1 Chronicles chapters 2 through 8? Had they already, for the most part, as we would say, split the scene, left the main body of Israelites? Were Canaanites among the Tyrian rowers, toilers in ships, the forebears of the Canaanite Teliah scoffed at in the book of Tephi, page 17? In the next lesson, the subject will again be about the Phoenicians in general. There were some very interesting things happening 500 to 700 years before the Golden Age of Tyre, which we need to know about, for it revolves around the very personal lives of our patriarchs. Their living conditions were quite different than we might realize. End of Watchman's Teaching Letter number 26. Thank you for listening.